Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal. I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis. How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. As some of you know, Francis was just got back from a little hiatus in his motherland of Ireland.
Yeah, I did, actually.
So some pretty cool stuff happened. I got to tell you a quick story.
Do you know what the best thing about being on an island was?
I know what the best thing for me was.
I was 6,000 miles away from you.
That's the same thing, then. Absolutely. But so while you were gone, I just want to tell you a quick story about something that it's just such a pet peeve for me, and it has no real impact on the restaurant. But a group of people came in the other night, and they were a party of six, and the first two couples got there, and the gentlemen excused themselves and went to the men's room, and the ladies were sitting there, and one lady gets on her cell phone and starts talking to somebody on her cell phone, and the other lady has one of the Bluetooth things in her ear that, you know, it just kind of sets in the ear, and a little blue light goes on, and they're talking.
Yeah.
Lieutenant
Uhura.
Exactly. These two women have come to dinner together, and they've decided that what they need to do right now is talk on their cell phone to whoever they've left behind.
I wonder, why didn't they just go out to dinner with the other people?
That's exactly what I was thinking. So anyway, I'm thinking, okay, there's nobody sitting around them, no big deal, we'll just let it go for a minute or two. And the gentlemen come back, and the women hang up their phones, and the one woman puts her phone back in her pocket. And the other woman leaves the little Bluetooth thing on her ear while they're having dinner.
If it were one of my dinner guests, my choices are two. I either reach over and pull it off her ear, or I go to the bar and eat by myself.
But, appetizers come. She's still got the phone on her ear. Now, she's not talking on the phone, but just in case somebody more important than you should call me, I need to be at the ready.
Right, I can't have them. I might miss the call if I have to reach in my bag for the phone.
She sat there for 2.5 hours with this little contraption on her ear the entire time, like Lieutenant Uhura, as if Captain Kirk was needed to beam her up at any moment.
Mark, Lieutenant Uhura never went down to the planet.
Well, whatever. Unless, in case she needed to beam Captain Kirk to the restaurant at any moment, she needed to be ready, at the ready, with her phone on her ear through dinner in a nice restaurant. What are you doing?
Starfleet might call. Can I take somebody? I have a friend who wears that thing a lot when we're out, like, just, you know, going for coffee or whatever. And I'm like, your cell phone is in your breast. You're not driving, okay? Your cell phone is in your breast pocket.
I understand. The wireless earpiece for your phone, I understand completely. You're alone in your car. You don't want to be playing with a wire. You want to be wireless. Great. You're even walking down the street, and it's New York City, and you don't want to talk to anybody because you're mean. Okay? So you're walking down. You don't want to talk to anybody, so you talk on your phone. Of course, we all think you're nuts, okay? Because when we first approach you, you're talking to yourself.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay. You know what? That's actually dangerous, Mark. People don't realize that the Bluetooth while walking down the street, the headpiece while walking down the street, is actually dangerous. Did you know this?
Why is it dangerous, Francis?
Because you can't tell the crazy people from the people just talking on their phone anymore. Because 10 years ago, guys walking down the street talking to himself, you cross the street. Now he could be talking to his mom.
It's just an unbelievable
trend.
But
literally, I've been walking in New York City, and crazy people talking to God walk right next to me. They might kill me. I think it's just a guy talking on his Bluetooth.
Yeah, I guess it's just another symptom of how ungracious, is that the word that I'm looking for?
Yeah, it'll work.
Okay,
whether you're looking for it or not, it'll work.
But how ungracious we've become. And I want to go out to dinner with you. I want to spend 2.5 hours with you.
By the way, let me be clear. As far as a restaurateur is concerned, it doesn't disturb the dining room at all. You're not disturbing people at other tables at all. But
if you're wearing an ugly piece of jewelry, it doesn't bother the people at the next table. They might make fun of you.
Right.
but it doesn't bother, you know, you're not talking loudly and being obtrusive. You're just a subject of good humor.
Well, I think the idea is we had a manners expert on once, and the manners expert said, if you're at dinner with someone and you take a cell phone call, you're hanging up on the people you're with in order to talk to the people that you're not with.
Yes, exactly.
Why not hang out with the people you're with tonight and then go visit that person on a different evening? And I don't get it. Anyway, but I just came back from Ireland, and I wanted to talk a little bit about, well, there's some really good food happening in Ireland. More better than there was. I went out to dinner with my cousins outside of Dublin, had a great
meal. Yeah, there's a whole slew of people out there listening to you now going, yeah, I don't believe him.
Well, it ain't Paris, okay? I'm not saying it's Paris. But it is getting better. And actually, I have a family in the Republic of Ireland, in Southern Ireland. And I also have friends where I stayed for a few days in Northern Ireland. And I went to Belfast, which is notoriously a city that rolls up the carpet at night. You know, and they have an amazing, and I've mentioned this guy before. I went back to see him again. He was there. A guy named Hayden Lambert at the Merchant Hotel in Belfast. It's the most beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful restaurants I've ever been in, Mark. It really is. And the bar is phenomenal. And they have, you know, it's very nice. We showed up for a reservation. We said, well, we're going to go sit and have cocktails.
While you're there, do you hang upside down and kiss the bar?
No. It's a Blarney Stone. I'm not talking to you about Irish stuff anymore. But the dinner was great. The bar was tremendous. And, you know, they bring you your menus when you sit at the bar and you order at the bar, and then they come and get you when your first course is about to hit the table. I love that style
nice.
Of service. I really do. But the one thing that I wanted to point out is my girlfriend, Jen. She doesn't really like spicy food. And, well, we were in Ireland, we were at this bar, and she said, you know, the venison looks really good, but it's got, you know, an ancho chili, spicy ancho chili sauce, and I don't know.
Ancho chili sauce, I don't do ancho chili so much.
And what I said was, you know what, you order that, and if you don't like it, I'll eat it, but I don't think you're going to have a problem. She said, well, I don't know, ancho chili sauce, trust me. So the ancho chili sauce comes. You know, spicy has a different definition in Ireland than it does here. She's like, oh, that's not hot at all. I could drink that. Yeah, so the spicy.
So it's
spicy.
Irish hot. It's not really. Texas hot.
Right. It's not Arizona ancho chili. You know, whatever. But I have to say, I thought the food was very good. And there are a bunch of chefs in Ireland now. Maybe not a bunch. There are a number of chefs in Ireland now who are...
Let's go with handful. How's that?
Who are working with traditional Irish ingredients the way that we work with ingredients.
Oh, you're leaving me way too open.
Stop it.
Traditional
lamb.
Irish ingredients.
No, lamb. With a lot of lamb. With black pudding. There's a Clonakilty black pudding is amazing.
We've got the big potato and the little potato. We do those two different ways.
All right, listen. You're making fast generalizations here. You're going too far. Listen. The only reason we didn't have...
We got big rocks that we make soup out of and little rocks that we make soup out of.
No, but the food scene in Ireland is pretty good. There's that famous cooking school, the Ballymallow Cooking School, which was famous for that. But there is really a fine dining cuisine. There are Michelin-rated restaurants in Dublin now. And like I said, I can't recommend the Merchant Hotel in Belfast. It's worth a trip to Belfast, literally. If you can swing through Belfast, it's absolutely worth a trip to Belfast. I didn't stay at the Merchant. I stayed with friends. But to go to dinner there and have cocktails there and the whole shebang, it was tremendous. We had planned to go there and go out afterwards. We just stayed the whole night.
That's great.
Went back to the bar.
When you find that right place, there's no reason to go to the next place.
Anyway, when we come back, we're going to be talking with a couple of really interesting bartenders. Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz wrote a book called The Art of the Bar, Cocktails Inspired by the Classics. It's a beautiful book. We'll be talking with them in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Our guests today are Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz. They have a lot of years bartending, including more than 6 years at Absinthe Brasserie and Bar in San Francisco. Their book is The Art of the Bar, Cocktails Inspired by the Classics.
Hey, Jeff, Rob, how are you today? Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Love your book, and read it actually just last night, because I was on vacation. I got back, and... We have a research assistant. One of our research assistants also works for us in the bar, in the restaurant. And I got this note from her. This is a little private review. Note from Alex. This book is awesome. From reading it, it seems like these guys really share our philosophy about fresh ingredients and learning from classic cocktails. The best thing about this book is that they actually capture the excitement of creating a new cocktail and the excitement of being a bartender in a way that someone at home might understand and then be able to catch that excitement. It's the most spirited bartending book I've ever read. It almost makes me want to bartend. Even though I don't really want to bartend, don't you dare schedule me for a shift.
Great. Nice.
So why do you guys think that you felt the need to write a book like this?
Rob, any thoughts? It was kind of a natural progression, I think. After everything we were doing at the restaurant, we just wanted to, Jeff had a little bit of a writing background. He kind of pushed me along. I was a little hesitant at first, but, we thought it would be a great way to share everything we were doing at Absinthe with the rest of the, at first, the restaurant world, but then as the thing progressed with the rest of the country. Really.
Well, let's talk about the art.
The only problem is you guys have written our book, so now I'm mad at you.
Right, exactly.
Sorry.
Well, let's talk about the art of the bar and what you're trying to capture, because this isn't just a cocktail manual. It talks about the cocktails as a huge part and a beautiful cocktail selection, but it's not just about cocktails, is it?
Right.
Rob?
Well, you know, it was really a culinary approach to cocktails. Using fresh ingredients, making your own syrups, making your own bitters, and it's about creating cocktails. And it's not just sticking to these recipes. It's about using any recipe as a jumping-off point.
Well, let's talk about cocktails for a second, because I think that people who listen to this show every day know how seriously we take cocktails, but maybe somebody listening for the first time or who doesn't listen to the show every day might not recognize.
We have here in New Jersey a lot of we have very few real cocktail bars, and in Manhattan I think there are some real cocktail bars. But there are also what we call martini bars, where you can order your martini by color. And let's talk about the difference between, you know, a bartender who throws together, you know, Goldschlager green cream de menthe and you know, brown cream de coco and makes something with a lot of fruit in it, that's kind of green.
And layers them so they can be pretty colored.
Right, and lights it on fire and gives it to you.
Well, it has to be, right?
Well, of course. Well, but let's talk about somebody who uses, you know, an apple martini, say, made with apple pucker, as opposed to an apple martini made with apple juice or Calvados or Applejack.
Yeah, I think that it really just, I don't know, I know from Rob and my perspective, we kind of had the advantage of being able to make the latter cocktail, you know, the Calvados and fresh apple syrup sort of style cocktails, a lot of it just because we're in a restaurant. You have access to different ingredients that you wouldn't necessarily have in other bars. It can maybe stem from just what you have access to, and then from there you start seeing the difference in that Calvados cocktail is so much better than that apple pucker cocktail that it wants to drive you to start experimenting with other flavors and other ingredients that, you know, you may not think about putting into a glass, but, you know, once you try it, you come out with something that's pretty spectacular.
Well, I think you use the key word there, and the key word there is ingredients, okay? Like great food, great cocktails start with great ingredients. And as soon as you start using fake ingredients, just like this, as soon as you start using, you know, fake food, your end result is not going to be as good as if you had real ingredients in it.
Absolutely.
Talk to me about the kind of ingredients that makes you think that a cocktail is really not legit, not something you talk in your book about sort of boat cocktails, you know, like pina coladas and blender cocktails. What kind of cocktails do you think don't fit into the same category as, you know, classic and noteworthy cocktails?
Anything with vodka.
What was that?
Anything with vodka, really.
Yeah. Well, let's talk to us about, I mean, a real cocktailians sort of have a prejudice against vodka. Why?
It doesn't bring anything to the overall palate of what's involved in the cocktail. Vodka, you know, I mean, you can taste through a series of different vodkas and you can find subtle nuances between them, but when you start adding other flavors to them, it gets lost. And so it doesn't incorporate anything into the drink, where if you just switch out vodka with gin, all of a sudden you've got these herbal qualities that are going to come through, and it plays so much more of a part.
Yeah, one of the things that that Francis and I like to say is, if you know, if you're going to use vodka, you might as well just use grain alcohol, and you know, if alcohol is the only reason that you're adding an ingredient, then use grain alcohol. Don't bother buying an expensive vodka.
Exactly.
You know, there are two sides to that coin. One is that if all you want is fruit juice, then why not? You know, vodka is for people who don't like alcohol in their drinks, because it's a way to not taste the alcohol. And the other thing that somebody said once on the show, they said, you know, penne alla vodka is nice as long as you hold the penne. So if you're going to drink your vodka, drink it straight, preferably with some caviar. We'll be back in a moment talking with Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz about their book, The Art of the Bar, Cocktails Inspired by the Classics. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. We're talking today with Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz. Their book is The Art of the Bar, Cocktails Inspired by the Classics. You can find out how to get it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll post it up there.
So, Jeff, one of the things that I want to ask you, and one of the reasons we invite people on the show is because they agree with us about ice. Ice is a really important part of a drink, and I think it's so undervalued by most places that make cocktails that they don't understand that it is part of the drink. Why don't you talk to us about how ice is part of a drink?
Well, and good and bad ice.
Excuse me?
And what's good and what's bad in ice?
Well, you know, I mean, ice plays a number of different roles. The primary function that most people will think about is it chills down your cocktail. You know, but something else that most people don't think about is the fact that it actually dilutes down your cocktail as well. I mean, one of the things that makes a martini what it is the fact that you're stirring it with ice for a while and you're incorporating some water into that drink as well.
And that the amount of water you put in depends on how much ice you put in.
How much ice, how long you stir it, how long you shake it.
And what type of ice.
Exactly.
General rule of thumb is one-third of every cocktail is water, and that water is coming from the ice.
Now, but talk to us about different kinds of ice. We have in our restaurant, we have a cold draft ice machine, which makes 1-inch by 1-inch by 1-inch cubes.
Very nice.
Which we prefer over the hollow ice or chip ice or half moon ice. What do you guys say is the right ice for a bar to have?
Cold draft is definitely ideal. I mean, there's so few. It's expensive, as you know.
Yeah.
Bring it in.
Well, it's also expensive because it breaks like every 15 minutes.
There goes the cold draft sponsorship.
And you end up buying ice from an outside source every night, too.
Yeah. Why is cold draft ice better?
It's solid. Mm-hmm. So if you're shaking or stirring a cocktail, you can chill it or stir it or shake it for longer, bring it to the right temperature without adding too much ice, without adding too much water, without diluting it too much.
Right. One of the things Jeff said before is one of the purposes of ice is to change the temperature of the cocktail to bring it to the appropriate temperature that you want, be it very, very cold, somewhat cold, or just a slight chill. If you put ice that melts very quickly into a cocktail, you end up with
a watery, not-so-cold cocktail.
A watery, not so much.
Hey,
the other aspect is if you're serving a cocktail on the rocks, even if you're going to shake it and pour it over ice, if you're pouring it over hollow ice, that ice is going to melt way too fast. You know, so if you take a couple minutes to drink the cocktail, by the time you get to the bottom, you're just drinking water.
When we come back after the news, we're gonna answer the eternal question, when to shake and when to stir. And these guys are either going to agree with us on this or we're going to have a little fight about it.
I don't know if I can answer that on the radio, Francis.
In cocktails, Mark, in cocktails. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz have many years of bartending experience, and they've written a great book called The Art of the Bar, Cocktails Inspired by the Classics, which we and our staff love very much. Let's talk, guys, about Shaken, Not Stirred. James Bond, orders a martini, shaken, not stirred. Most people don't realize the joke of that was, of course, there was a well-endowed bartender, and he was trying to get not only the martini to shake, and that's where that came from. And then a bunch of you dummies out there order your martinis that way. I'm not that buxom.
If you have the right bartender, I think you should still order it shaken.
Okay, martinis, Manhattans, shakens. When do you shake? When do you stir, and why?
Down and dirty. Shake it if it's got juice in it, if it's got any sort of cream, egg, anything like that. If it's just spirits, you know, martini. You're talking gin and vermouth, Manhattan. You're talking whiskey and vermouth. Stir it.
Why?
You know, when it comes to, at least for me, when it comes to Manhattan or a martini, I want that drink to be as crystalline as possible. I really want it to have a really nice, soft, silky mouthfeel.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get that when you shake it, especially you talk about shaking a Manhattan and you have bitters in it. The bitters will actually leave a layer of foam on the top of the drink.
Yeah, you'll get froth.
Yeah.
And that right there, you know, as soon as that's been done to a Manhattan, in my opinion, the drink's been ruined.
It's ruined. It never comes back.
Yeah. Well, you might as well have a whiskey sour if you're going to do that.
Yeah, well, you know, it's true. It's not a martini anymore. You know, it's funny. I'll go someplace and it's very, very, and you talk about this in your book, and I think it was very well handled. When you shake a martini, it gets very, very cold. Yes, indeed it does, and it gets cute little ice chips that float on the top, and that's great. But it's not a martini because it's so diluted.
Yeah, what happens there is...
The thing to remember is if you stir it correctly, it should be just as cold.
But right. But it won't be as diluted, and
true.
It won't be aerated.
True.
It's funny.
Right.
There are
it will be crystal clear.
I was recently went on vacation, and there's a great cocktail bar in Belfast, by the way, where, you know, the Belfast nightlife has been challenged for a long time, but this guy named Hayden Lambert at the Merchant Hotel there, who's doing an amazing, all the ice for all the cocktails is hand-chipped, so he has ice shaped for each glass. It's just brilliant. But before I left, I went to a bar here in New Jersey, and I ordered a martini. And the bartender, I didn't specify because I just said I'd like this kind of martini straight up, and the bartender was shaking it, and I was like, no, step away from the shaker.
And he of course thought you were nuts and he of course was correct, but for a whole different set of reasons. You know, I want to talk about some of the things in your book here where you talk about and you talk about the art of the bar, but you don't just talk about the art of the bar. You talk about the art of bartending.
Yeah.
And how important it is to use all of your senses when you're bartending. And I just want to talk about while you're making a drink, using all of your senses. You know, Rob, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, the first thing you do when you're making a cocktail is you should taste each of the ingredients that you're planning on using. I mean, even if you have made the cocktail 100 times, you have to, you know, every time you're going to make it, you should have a pretty good sense of what that ingredient tastes like, and secondly, what it smells like.
Well, especially if you're using real ingredients and true ingredients,
right.
And you're using fresh juices, they're going to be different. If it's
right.
December, your fresh squeezed orange juice is going to taste different than if it's March.
Absolutely. You know, same with even your vermouth. You have to smell it. I mean, vermouth can turn. It's vermouth.
Mm-hmm.
It's wine.
You know what's funny? When I go to a bar and I see bartenders making a drink and sort of smelling it as they go, and a rule that we always teach and that you know a lot of people practice, and I'm sure you guys do as well, is that a bartender, if you're making a drink, once you add the ice, the clock is ticking because that ice is starting to melt. And so what they do is they basically build a drink before they put the ice in it, and they smell it as they go and remember what each thing should smell like so they can make any adjustments. And whenever I see bartenders, you know, finish a drink, put it in the glass, and then take a little sip with a straw, I think, it's too late. What are you going to do about it now? I mean,
well, you could always adjust. I mean, but you should do it all the whole process. That's like a final test.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's your final arbiter of
like
you know.
The chef tasting the sauce before he puts it on the pasta.
Did I succeed?
But when you see a bartender putting his nose in your cocktail glass, you shouldn't be alarmed, right? That's a sign that he's actually doing something.
As long as it doesn't break the surface.
I was going to say, depends on how far he puts his nose in.
I was thinking, as long as he's inhaling.
As a matter of fact, I've been asking you to get your. Oh, man.
That's just wrong.
I'm sorry.
I've been asking you to get your nose out of my business for quite some time.
Oh, Lord. Now, you talked about something earlier. I mean, I hate to... Cause, you know, I think a lot of people listen to this show, both at home and people in the industry. We're blessed that we get a lot of emails from people in the industry all over. And these are really good precepts. We're joking around a lot, but, you know, we take cocktails as seriously as we take cuisine. I mean, all four of the guys you're listening to really do. And so you can get some precepts. I mean, I'm serious. Smell your cocktails as you make them. You brought up another point earlier. When you pour a drink over ice, like we serve a whiskey sour, we have our own version of a stone sour at our restaurant, and we teach our bartenders with our beautiful cold draft ice, they shake the sour to make it frothy, but they don't use the same ice that you shook the sour with, to even though it's on the rocks. You put in the rocks glass fresh pieces of ice and pour your shaken drink over fresh ice. You guys advocate the same thing in your book. Why? Let's throw that to Jeff.
You know, you're going to end up having a drink that's going to stay cold longer, number one, because you haven't started to break down your ice by shaking it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the new cubes are colder.
The new cubes are colder. They're drier. They haven't been deconstructed at all. They're going to hold their structure. They're going to hold their temperature much, much longer. And so even if you are using smaller ice cubes, chances are it's going to take a little bit longer for that ice to dilute down and turn into even more water in your cocktail.
Well, and presentation-wise, the drink looks always great over nice big cubes.
Oh, absolutely.
I kind of like when one of those cubes kind of whacks me in the nose while I'm drinking my cocktail.
I'll whack you in the nose. If you ever get lonely, I'll just come over and whack you in the nose.
Only once.
I mean, you know, you can also think about that's kind of an advantage. A lot of times people will ask why their cocktails don't come out quite the same when they're making them at home. And, you know, I think one of the advantages that you have at home is the fact that you do have typically bigger ice cubes, and so you can shake out a drink and you can strain it over the rocks, and you've got these large, big, beautiful ice cubes that are just going to keep it cold. And again, it's not going to dilute down on you. It's not going to turn to just a watery mess in the bottom of the glass by the time you're done with it.
You know, so many
you're
of you...
are also solid.
Yes. So many of you at home have those ice makers, and you set it on the setting that makes the ice cubes the fastest, which is the smallest ice cubes. But if you're having a cocktail party, if you're really going to be making drinks with the cocktails, set it on the setting that makes the biggest ice cubes, but also put some of those old traditional trays in the freezer, and you'll see that they really do make better ice cubes, better cocktails.
Square ice cubes totally rock.
They come in all different sizes.
And they're just like people, aren't they? It's just diversity and richness. No, and it's true, but the thing is, what we do often is for drinks that are sour drinks, right? We'll put you pour it over fresh cubes if it's on the rocks. But for drinks that are like a Manhattan on the rocks or something, we serve it like a Manhattan on the rock. We have large cubes that just about fit our glass, and that is the lowest melt rate, so it doesn't dilute your glass, and it keeps your drink the coldest.
And as long as we don't serve more than 48 of those a night, we're fine.
That's how many
the same person.
So what do you guys think about that? I mean, is that a valid way to go?
I think if you have time, go for it. I mean, if you know you're having a cocktail party at home and you have a certain glass and you know you're going to serve a cocktail on the rock, if you can do it, get freeze a big cube. Say it's a bucket glass or an old-fashioned glass. Freeze one cube that size that would fit in a glass.
Here's a little tip. Okay.
It'll make a beautiful presentation.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
It'll melt longer. It'll just all around be a better cocktail.
But again, that also comes down to if you have the time to be able to do it. And you know, there's times where you're going to have an impromptu cocktail party. Maybe you have people show up and you don't expect them. You know, I think that it's great to put all of this emphasis on the ice that you're going to use and how big it should be and all that. But at the same time, don't let that get in the way of the fact that, hey, it's Tuesday night. I want to have a nice Manhattan over at my house and use what you've got still. But, you know, if you take those extra little steps and stir your Manhattan, you know, in your mixing glass and then go and strain that over another ice cube or a couple ice cubes, you know, even if they are a little bit smaller, it's still going to end up being better than if you were just to stir it and take those ice cubes out, put it in a different glass and you know, drink it that way.
And, of course, the other thing you can do is adjust what cocktail you're drinking to what ice you have.
Absolutely.
Hey, we're going to come back in just a moment and talk more with Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz about their wonderful book, The Art of the Bar. You can find out more about their book, and you can even order it through our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, with Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi, and we're talking with Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz, who've written the book The Art of the Bar, Cocktails Inspired by the Classics. Now, you guys worked at the same bar, and that's sort of where the genesis of this came from, it at Absinthe Brasserie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
yeah,
why don't you tell us about that and the cocktails that are there and what inspired this book? What was the genesis of this book?
You know, Rob and I spent... at least a year, Rob, something like that, working together on Saturday nights, where we would push each other back and forth. You know, we would come in with different ingredients on any given Saturday night, and that would be kind of the theme of the night. And we'd start pushing each other into what we were calling iron bartender competition.
Uh-huh.
And it was all in fun, but it was also in trying to drive each other's creativity to see what we could come up with that night, and we get the guests at the bar incorporated into it as well, kind of rally up our own little teams on either side of the bar. And I think that's where so much of you know, what we decided to do with the book started to come from, was just we were experimenting a lot and coming up with a lot of new ideas and kind of pushing each other, and we wanted to just figure out a way to share that with people.
Let me ask you about Absinthe. One of the things that we talk about all the time is, while the cocktails are important, they're very important, and the craft of drink making and mixology is very important, we think that bars can be very important as a locus of community, and we think that the barman can be just a very important part of a community. How does Absinthe fit into all that, and how does your role behind the bar fit into all that?
Personally, I think Absinthe fits into that in really the best of all worlds. I think that, you know, we have the benefit of having bartenders who have a great amount of experience behind a bar. They have incredible knowledge about spirits, about the history of cocktails, and as well, they're just really well-rounded, well-traveled people who can have a conversation with somebody at the bar about just about anything, and, you know, be able to keep their guests engaged and entertained and still provide them with a great cocktail experience as well. And you know, it's, I personally I'm a little bit biased. I think that Absinthe is one of the best, if not the best, bar in San Francisco.
It's Absinthe Brasserie and Bar in San Francisco, and we'll put a link up to that on our website as well. But I think that, you know, one of the things that brings people, and I love that cocktails have come back, and that people are paying attention to cocktails again, and that the barman and the chef are again, you know, claiming more of a place of prestige in our society. But I think that the bar can be, you know, you go to the bar because it has great cocktails, but then a sense of community can really form around that bar. And I think that's great what you guys do out there. Now,
well, the thing about Absinthe is it's the type of place where people come to actually talk about cocktails. Now that it's built that reputation up, people come, they want to taste whatever the bartenders are working on that night. They want to talk about cocktails, talk about new spirits,
uh-huh,
and just be a part of the whole thing.
Well, again, and we talked about ingredients earlier in the show, but I think the kind of renaissance of the cocktail has really followed that same renaissance of focusing on, you know, what we're eating, and we don't want old frozen ingredients, and we want to kind of have the best of the best in our drinks, just like we want to have them in our food.
I also believe, and I want to know what you guys think about this, I believe that this is part and parcel of people are drinking less but better. I mean, it's unacceptable to go out and get tanked and drive your car home anymore. And so if you're only going to have three drinks, you can have three beers, three nondescript beers, you know, that you might have had, 10 years ago. Or you might say, you know what, I only have three drinks. Let's pay attention to these. I mean, you think that's part of what's driving this?
I definitely think that's part of what's driving it. I think that people are also, you talk so much about people taking the bartending experience more seriously and taking chefs more seriously, and people are eating better food. They're more interested in what they're putting into their bodies, and so you're right. They're going to want to have something that's going to give them just kind of this flavor explosion and really just sing, and even if it's only one or two, they want to have a great, great cocktail experience. And so I definitely think that's true.
So I really like the story about how you guys kind of came together behind the bar to form a partnership. How Francis and I did a little differently. We started drinking together first, and then we started working behind the bar together. But, it's slightly different, but same kind of principles.
Yeah, the drinking has to come after work. So.
Well, this brings me to the next topic that I really wanted to talk about. You have a section on mocktails or non-alcoholic cocktails in your bar, in your book. How important are they, non-alcoholic cocktails, and what should one look for in a non-alcoholic cocktail? Let's go to Jeff.
I think that they're incredibly important. I don't think that, you should limit what you're doing just to people that are going to be drinking. There's nights where, you don't want to have a cocktail. There's people that just don't drink for whatever reason, and you need to be able to offer something to them that's of the same caliber as what you would, the same thought that you would put into your cocktails. You need to do that with non-alcoholic drink as well.
Somebody needs to take me home. Somebody needs to take me home.
Right. And I want them to be to be pleased coming out with us.
Absolutely.
The other thing is, for those of you who have bars out there and or own restaurants who are listening, or even for, people who want to have people over for a cocktail party, if you offer a mocktail that you put as much thought into as the cocktails that are there, the person who doesn't drink doesn't quite feel left out. And remember, there's always the veto factor. In any group of 10 people, if there are two that are like, yeah, well, I can't drink, let's go someplace else, then they're going to bring the whole group with them.
Exactly.
We were going to let you guys go, but do you mind if we hold you over so we can talk about drink garnishes when we come back?
Sure.
We only have a few minutes left in the show, but we'll garnish the show right at the end with a couple of words of wisdom from Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we're talking to Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz about their wonderful book, The Art of the Bar, Cocktails Inspired by the Classics.
So let's go to Rob. We talk about drink garnishes, and I think that very frequently, most bars, frankly, don't put enough emphasis on finishing the drink. Talk to us a little bit about drink garnishes and what can really finish a drink.
Well, it's always the most overlooked part of a cocktail. I mean, you couldn't spend so much time actually putting the liquids together in the glass. You maybe sometimes forget about the garnish. It could be very important because it's that last flavor element. I mean, mm-hmm. It could be aromatic garnish, where you could do a splash of bitters on top of the drink, which would give it a different color. And then the aromatic element is when you lift it to your mouth to take a sip, you're actually smelling the garnish.
I like a little bit of mint to smack me in the nose sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It can also tickle your nose, too.
Yeah, so, if you're in the right cocktail, a little candied ginger or a brandy-soaked cherry you guys write about in the book, there's something really special about that.
There's a joke buried in candied ginger tickle my nose somewhere, but I can't figure it out quick enough for the end of the show. We want to thank you guys for coming to talk with us about your book, The Art of the Bar. Jeff Hollinger and Rob Schwartz, thank you very much.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks so much, guys.
These guys were great. The book is really tremendous.
The book is really spectacular, and I guess the best thing I can say about the book and about the how insightful it is and the recipes and kind of the methodology in it is, as I was leaving about a week ago, I took this book home to so I could read it and do the research. And as I was leaving with the cocktail book, two of my bartenders were closing up the bar, and one of them turned to me and said, where are you going with that book? And I said, I'm bringing it home. These guys are going to be on the show. I need to read it thoroughly and really understand everything that's in it. And they said, are you going to bring it back? And I said, yeah, I'll bring it back in a few days when I'm done with it. Then Francis has to read it. And they said, can I have it when you're done?
Actually, we ordered seven for seven different employees.
They didn't know that yet, but hopefully.
They're not listening.
They're listening now. They're about to. Hey, guess what, guys? You're getting a book.
Anyway, if you're interested about cocktails and you're interested about the story of the cocktail and the history of the cocktail, this is a great new book, The Art of the Bar, Cocktails Inspired by the Classics. Check it out on our website or come down to Cafe Lombardi and have a classic cocktail. Or if you're out in San Francisco, you can stop at the Absinthe Brasserie and Bar. You can find out about it all on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.